on the job, every minute counts. That's why Lowe's now has ProBlock Quick Dry Primer, expertly manufactured by Sherwin-Williams. Engineered for pros to dry fast and go on smooth for virtually flawless results that keep your job moving. It's available in oil and water-based, and getting it is easy. Order online by 2 p.m. and get free same-day delivery right to your job site. Lowe's, we help, you save. Orders placed after 2 p.m. will be delivered next day. Valid in select zip codes. Subject to driver availability. More terms apply.
Howdy, folks. Today we have a very special episode of Brilliant, where I have a conversation with the great Jason Offutt, so stick around. I'm Alan Brill. Welcome to Brilliant, a podcast from the mind of Brill. Warning, it gets dark in here. We are excited to welcome to the show today the man who literally wrote the book on the shadow people phenomenon, Darkness Walks, The Shadow People Among Us. Also, he's wrote several excellent books about the strange, supernatural, and just plain weird side of Missouri, Haunted Missouri, Paranormal Missouri, Show Me Your Monsters, and What Lurks Beyond the Paranormal in Your Own Backyard, as well as several excellent works of fiction, including the award-winning The Girl in the Corn, A Bad Day for the Apocalypse, and How to Kill Monsters Using Common Household Items. He teaches journalism at Northwest Missouri State University. I am excited and I dare say thrilled to welcome to the show today, Jason Offutt. How are you today, sir?
I'm great. I am so happy to be on the show. Thank you so much for the invite.
Oh, it's my honor for sure. Now, just a small town Missouri boy as well, correct?
Right. Yeah, I grew up on a farm outside, about 6 miles outside of Orrick, Missouri, which is, I don't know, about 30 some miles due east of Kansas City, Missouri. It was 800 people. It's probably about 700 and something now, but, yeah, small town Missouri boy.
And that's awesome. And here you are, published author several times over, teaching journalism at Northwest Missouri State University. You have made it, sir. And, I dare say you're inspiration for the rest of us small town folk out there.
Well, I do appreciate that. And the one bit of advice I give to people is, just don't give up. I don't consider myself a better journalist or better author than other people. I was just too stupid to give up, and I kept working on it until I got what I hoped for.
That's excellent.
Follow your dreams, guys.
There you have it. Start a podcast when you're an aging redneck unfamiliar with technology. Just do what you do. Now I'm literally. Or I'm talking to the man who literally wrote the book on shadow people. It would be just criminally negligent not to ask your opinion on them, what they might be. And there are no solid conclusions to this. And if you've had any personal experiences with them or what got you into the subject, I guess.
All right. Yeah. I'll hit you with the personal experience that I was, 8 or 9 years old. And one night I went to bed, sat down in my bed, turn the light off, and living on a farm, we had we never had any reason to close our curtains because there's nobody around to see into the house. And so if the moon was out, my room would be a uniform gray, and I could see the Farrah Fawcett poster on the other side of my wall. And that's my age right there, man. And I remember I was sitting there, I was about ready to lay down, and there was something black that moved in the corner of my room. And so I stared at it, and all of a sudden a person walked out. And he looked like kind of two-dimensional and just walked past me. He was black. It's like, those magnets, your fridge magnets. Peel one out, look on the back, man, and they're two-dimensional, and they're just black, and there's no features. That's what this thing looked like, and it walked past me in a kind of jerky motion and into the hallway. And so, of course, I yelled for my dad, and he said, a curse word and got out of bed, turned the light on, and I'm, like, freaking out because I just sent my dad into the same hallway that this shadow being walked into. But dad walked into my room and he's like, what's going on? And I told him, and he's like, just go back to bed. And these things kept appearing in my room from the same spot, doing the same thing. Sometimes it was one, sometimes two, sometimes half a dozen. And they were just walking through my bedroom. And they eventually stopped, but in my head, I called them shadow people. And it wasn't until like the early 90s when I was listening to Art Bell, and he started talking about shadow people, and it made me realize that I'm not the only one. Other people, because people called in and talked about their experiences. Because I didn't talk to anybody about this.
Right, yeah.
I was too afraid to. But then I started looking into it more. I wrote a newspaper column for 4.5 years called From the Shadows. And it was exploring paranormal topics. And when I first started writing about shadow people, I got loads of responses. My inbox filled up with people talking about their shadow people experiences. And after a while, I'm like, there's a book in this. There's gotta be. So I interviewed people, and I wanted to look at this not just from a paranormal aspect, but I interviewed physicists. I interviewed a Catholic archbishop, an expert in Cherokee shamanism, expert in Hinduism, an expert in Islam, all these different religions. And all of these religions have shadow people in their belief system. Cherokee shamanism, it's they're medicine men, medicine people who've and they've the shaman who've gone bad,
Right.
and they're using their powers for ill will or for greed. The Hopi consider them a sign, an omen, an omen of death. In Hinduism, they're the jinn. Not Hinduism, but in Islam, they're the
Right.
jinn. The archbishop I talked to said they're demons, they're demonic entities. Hinduism had the best, at least the least evil explanation. They're just, spirits that haven't reincarnated yet. But I just found it fascinating that all these different belief systems from across the planet had these entities. What I came to figure out after interviewing more than 250 people was, I think there are a number of different entities. They just look the same. Okay,
Right.
because some of them behave like residual spirits, residual ghosts. They, walk down the stairs, turn the corner into the kitchen. You hear a drawer open. They do that every once in a while. That's what a residual spirit looks like. The ones I encountered, I referred to them as benign shadow people because they didn't take notice of me. If they did, I would have wet the bed a lot.
Right. Right.
But what might these be? I have no idea. Could they be there are John Keel,
Yeah.
the reporter who covered a lot of paranormal topics and wrote the book, The Mothman Prophecies. He thought that there were window areas in the world where the veil between universes are really thin, and sometimes they can cross over. Maybe what I was seeing and what other people see were other humans that were
Absolutely.
walking close to the window, and that's all we can see. And I definitely think some of them are evil entities, because the people who encountered the red-eyed entities, or the Hat Man, which is a guy in a suit wearing a fedora, they tend to feel like they're being fed on. Their fear, the fear that's being generated in them, is feeding the entity. So these are a whole lot of different things that just look the same to me.
Absolutely. And like I said, even when they feed on your fear, they leave you relatively alone for the most part, I think. I'm like, okay, well, maybe it's not a big deal. Then you hear a story about like Travis White, who encountered the shadow people, and it was a very big deal, as it turned out.
Right. And well, yeah, the Travis White story. And the thing is, I I knew him personally before he told me that story. I'm friends with the family. I mean, we went over to their, his dad and dad's house for picnics and stuff like that. My wife and I did. And then he and his dad told me this story, and it was
Yeah.
mind blowing, right? Yeah, Travis White had a shadow people stories. He saw this shadow being, and in a lot of cases, shadow beings start in the corner of your eye in the periphery, and then they start getting closer to the seeing them full on. And I've talked to people, I've interviewed people who've had that happen, but with him, it unmasked itself. And he said it was a face, a red face, a face that was scarred, and basically a wad of hamburger that had been beaten up and healed and rehealed and beaten and rehealed. And it started talking to him, telling him to do things. It was jealous of his girlfriend, and it told him to stop hanging out with his girlfriend. Well, he didn't, so it started talking to him about killing his girlfriend. And his father is really religious, and it started saying, "Well, you got to kill your father because he doesn't see the world like we do." And at some point he realized he needed help because he went to church, because they do that every Sunday. He went to church with his family, and the entity appeared to him and told him not to go into the church. And he went to the church anyway, and he felt like he had a fiery spike through his head, and he had to get up and leave. And he got up and he left, and he said, "I must have gotten in my truck because I woke up at one point after blacking out, and I was, like 70 miles away, sitting at a convenience store in my pickup."
That'd be frightening. Like, what
Oh,
happened
I
there?
know. I mean,
Oh,
and that
man.
goes with what the Catholic Archbishop was saying,
Yeah.
a demonic entity. That definitely seems like that's what it was. But
Absolutely, yeah.
he and his father tried an intervention, sort of not non-priest exorcism, and it seemed to work for a while. But the last time I talked to Travis, he said he feels it's still there. It doesn't show itself anymore, but he feels that it's still there.
Man, not been able to shake it still. That's,
Yeah,
oh my
I mean,
gosh.
these things are leeches, man. They hang on for dear life.
Yeah, that is terrifying, really, because it just out of nowhere just happened,
Yeah,
that's
and
the thing.
these are church-going people. It can happen to anybody.
Yeah, that's the truly frightening thing. Some of the stories of your books I'd like to discuss would be. One of them that's fascinated me, like when I say Skidmore, there's a lot of national recognition, what with the vigilante.
The vigilante and the man who disappeared.
Yep.
Branson Perry, yeah. And then there was an 18-year-old girl who was pregnant, 8 months pregnant, and a woman she struck up a friendship with over a certain type of dog
Dog, yeah.
on the internet. This woman came over and killed her by cutting her baby out and stealing it. So this town of 170 people has it's got something. It's got something going on.
Something's going on there. Yeah, that is nuts for a town that size. Those are huge things. And also, and I wasn't aware of this, the crater in the farmer's field.
Right.
That.
I ran into this because, man, I love small towns. God, I love them so much. I was just talking to somebody who knew my interests, and they're like, "Yeah, you know what? I remember when I was a kid, this happened." So I looked up, and outside of Skidmore, Missouri, in 1979, two young men, they were brothers, like 14 and 15, they were walking to bean fields, and if You didn't grow up in rural, on a farm. You don't know what walking the bean fields are, but you have either a hoe or a machete, a corn knife, and you walk down the bean field rows, and you cut weeds down. And they were doing this, and they found a crater, and it there was the beans, the soybeans looked scorched, like something had come in, hit the ground, there was the crater, and skipped and went out because the beans were scorched on the other side of the crater. The crater was strange. It had a bunch of what he described. I interviewed the guy who was one of the kids who found it, who was 60 at the time when I talked to him. But he said that, would he have been 60? No, he would have been his 50s. Anyway, he said it looked like a bunch of pencils, or a pencil had been poked in the ground. There were a bunch of holes about that size, and there was a grayish, bluish type powder all over the bottom of the crater. And he went and told the farmer. The farmer got a hold of the sheriff's department. Sheriff's department came out. They called the science departments at the university where I teach, and some scientists came out to investigate. The Federal Aviation Administration came to investigate because where I live here, where Skidmore is, it's about 15 miles away from where I am right now. It's a flyover for a lot of airlines. Off an Air Force base in Omaha, Nebraska, came down to investigate, and it hit the news, hit the national news. The national people were here, and UFO people from all over the country came to Skidmore to see this crater. And what they discovered was absolutely nothing. I'll get to more to that in a second, but they discovered nothing. And whenever, all the publicity blew over, and later in the summer, when it was getting closer to harvesting, the guy I interviewed, I can't remember his name. It's been, hell, 18 years since I talked to him, but he told me that there was a ring around the crater of soybeans that grew twice as large as all the soybeans in the rest of the field, and they had no weeds. There were weeds in the rest of the field, but not in that ring. And that was absolutely bizarre.
That's a
From
blew my
yeah, I
mind.
know. From years later, they didn't have that effect, but from that year, they did. I got a hold of the Federal Aviation Administration. They said it wasn't from their planes. I tried to get a hold of the scientist who investigated it, but he had died. His widow seemed really nice when I asked to talk to him on the phone, but I felt awful.
For sure.
And then I went to get a hold of off an Air Force base in Nebraska because they came down to investigate it. And I sent a Freedom of Information Act request, and it got rejected. I sent another one, it got rejected. I sent another one, it got rejected. Finally, I called them and asked, and I talked to the person who rejected my request, and she said, "We have those files. You just didn't ask in the proper way."
Oh my goodness.
And I'm like, "Great. What's the proper way?" And she said, "I can't tell you." So, I mean, that frustrated me. So a few years went by, and I asked again. And I got a letter back from them saying, "We had those files, but they've been destroyed in a flood, so we don't have them to give you anymore." Yeah, I've heard, yeah, we've all heard that one before.
Oh my goodness.
So I have no idea what it was. Nobody does. They looked, if it looked like it hit and skipped, like a rock on a pond, but they could never find if it ever landed anywhere else. So still a mystery.
Little tiny Skidmore just chock
Full
full
of
of these.
surprises, man.
Absolutely. And stick with the small towns. This story really captured my imagination from your hometown in Orrick with the night people, which then followed him to Liberty, but
Yeah, well, I mean, actually, the guy I interviewed is a cousin of mine.
Okay.
Yeah, so I mean, Vern laid this on me, and I'm like, why didn't you tell me this 20 years ago, man? This is crazy. Yeah, the night people. Yeah, my cousin Vern Windsor was when he was young, when he was like, I don't know, five, six, seven, something like that. He didn't like to go to bed. I mean, what kid really likes to go to bed unless you've been playing outside all day and are exhausted? And in the summer, when it was still light outside and he had to go to bed, he would just look out the window. And he said he would see people out there and he didn't know who they were. They'd be doing regular things like mowing the yard, washing the car. You know, a mom pushing a stroller down the sidewalk, that sort of thing. But the people all had really large eyes, like bulbous fish eyes. And he didn't think that was strange, but they were going in and out of houses, and he knew that wasn't their house, but he just considered them the night people. The people he knew were the day people, the
Yep.
normal people that he saw during the day. And he just spent a lot of time watching them until one day he saw a little kid outside with his father. And he was standing in the window and he waved at the kid and the kid waved back. And at that point, the father with the big eyes looked at and saw Vern looking at them. And it was like oh my God, he can see us. And then Vern didn't remember anything else. He went black and the next morning he woke up.
Yep, no more night people after
No
that.
more night people in Oric, at least. He said he saw them again when his family moved to Liberty, Missouri, which is about a half hour drive away. But he also said when he got older, he sneezed once, and in the Kleenex that he held, he said it looked like a Tylenol capsule, except for it
Huh.
was chrome. He said it looked like a chrome Tylenol capsule, and before he could do anything with it, it dissolved.
Gone, yeah.
So he was, he was wondering if the night people weren't aliens,
Yeah.
and he got an implant.
I just like the little kid brain, like, well, there's a day shift and there's a night shift. We're the day people, and then we turn it over to these guys. Yeah.
Yeah,
That's a
right.
fascinating story though. Absolutely. Here's kind of a controversial subject these days, Ouija boards. Either people say, oh no, they're stay far, far away from them, they're the work of the devil, or like, oh, we've been using talking boards and spirit boards for years. They're just a tool. And I don't know what side I fall on, but anyway, I'm getting the roundabout way to the story of another Missouri author, Mark Twain, has allegedly written a book using the Ouija board. Is that
He wrote two short stories. I don't remember one of them, but the other one was called A Princess of Mars. And the novel he wrote was called Jap Herron, Herron. And yeah, it was via Ouija board. He was dead. And oh, you're catching me on this one. I can't remember the name of the woman
oh,
who held a
patience? Yeah.
Patience Worth. Yeah, that was it. She was doing seances and contacted Mark Twain, and he wrote those short stories in that novel through a Ouija board. Now, did that happen?
Well.
Came to be came you know I did some looking into it, and she was a failed author.
Yeah.
And maybe she was kind of using this to get her own work some publicity. I don't know, but I downloaded the novel. You can download it, the PDF online anywhere, Jap Herron, and it doesn't sound like Twain.
Right. That's yeah. And I know they may eventually end up making a special board. Can you imagine doing a novel one
Oh my
letter?
gosh, right?
That was parenthetical. Spell out comma. Oh man, that would be.
That's 100,000 words, one letter at a time. Yeah,
I
that's exhausting.
couldn't imagine. But and that brings you to just the Ouija board in general, because yeah, like I say, there's a lot of A lot of controversy, I don't know if it's necessarily controversy, but strong opinions about it one way or the other. And I've heard everything. And my thoughts, if you're giving yourself open or you're opening a door for something to use you, then I mean, you're not going to know what comes through necessarily.
All right, yeah. I'm there with you. Anything using a Ouija board, automatic writing,
Yeah, pendulum.
seances, or just saying, hey, if there's anything here, come and sit by me and talk to me. You know, any of that stuff, you're inviting something you can't see. You don't know what it is. You don't know its intentions. You're inviting it to come and interact with you. And generally, I mean, I don't know how many people I've interviewed, you know, with who've done seances or used a Ouija board or automatic writing. The results are never good.
No.
They always have bad experiences. So yeah, I warn people, yeah, leave Ouija boards alone. Leave all that stuff alone.
And that's what I think too. Yeah, like the would you sure it's just a tool, but you don't know who you're getting to, who you're
Right.
getting.
Because I see a lot of, man, I want to believe in good entities. I really do. But there's so much bad stuff going
Yeah,
on in the
right.
world. I do know there are bad entities out there.
Yeah.
So just,
Yes.
yeah, protect yourself from those.
And my favorite time traveler, Madman Mike Markham, is a wonderful story.
Yeah, and well, I have more to it than is in my book.
All right.
All right, so yeah, Madman Markham was on Art Bell in the early, I think it was 93, 95, somewhere around there, was on Coast to Coast AM because Art read a story in the New York Times about him because Mike Markham was a young man from Ohio, and he moved to Northwest Missouri to follow a girl, and she dumped him. That stuff, I mean, that story as old as time, right? And so he was broke, he was sad, he was living in a small house, and he was an elect he loved electronics. He liked messing with electricity. So he built a Jacob's ladder, which is, you know, you saw him in the old Frankenstein movies, two, you know, poles like this, metal poles. They send a electric signal between the poles and they zoop out at the top. So he built one on his kitchen table and he was watching it zip out. And he noticed the weird heat signature on the top that shouldn't have been there. So he had a finishing screw on the table and he threw it at it and it hit the heat signature and disappeared. And about 10 seconds later, it reappeared at the other end of the table and fell. And I don't know how he came to this conclusion, but he thought he invented a time machine.
Right.
So,
Needed more power, though.
yeah, he needed, oh, it's late, Captain, we've got more power. Yeah, no, he needed more power. So the first thing he thought was, I've invented a time machine. I've got to make a man-sized one because not to increase the body of knowledge, not to better mankind. He wanted to go 3 days in the future and get the lottery numbers. Yeah, that's what he wanted. So he got some guys together and they stole six power line transformers. You know, big transformers from St. Joseph Power and Light. And he rewired one to get more power to come out of it. And he built a man-sized machine and he was going to jump through it. And when he flipped the switch, he knocked the power to the town out
Right.
because the town he was in was like 1,200 people. He knocked the
Yeah.
power. So he got arrested. And I interviewed the guy who arrested him. And he said that I don't think he invented a time machine, but he thought he did. He was convinced he invented a time machine. Yeah, I talked to quite a few people about Mike Markham. But going back to the Art Bell show, he appeared again a couple of years later because of Art's publicity. He got like $20,000 donated to him. He got
God.
equipment donated to him. So he was able to rent out a warehouse and build his machine again, and he was about ready to jump in it, and he called Art, and he said, "I'm going to jump into my machine." And then Art didn't hear from him again. And that was kind of where it ended. And I was able to find somebody who knew Markham and got me
Okay.
in touch with him. So I talked with him.
Awesome.
And he told me more about his experiments. When he built the man-sized machine, he bought grapefruits and tossed the grapefruits through,
Okay.
and they disappeared. He found the grapefruits out in the parking lot, which makes sense because the Earth's spinning. They're
Right.
going around the sun. The Milky Way's going like this. If you're going to travel in time, you're not traveling in space. So you're going to be somewhere else.
Yeah.
Right. So he tried to figure out where he would be if he went a couple of years in the future. Because if you just jump in that and go a couple of years in the future, you're going to be in outer space.
The void of
Yeah,
space,
yeah.
yeah.
So he did some of that. He also threw in some guinea pigs that died, but they appeared out in the parking lot too. And eventually he was ready and he jumped through. And he said he woke up in a snow-covered cornfield outside Cincinnati. And he had no idea who he was. And he was taken to a homeless shelter, and it took him a while to piece everything back together. And by the time he realized who he was and what had happened, so much time had gone by. He got a job and earned enough money to go back to his lab, that warehouse, and it was somebody else's now, and everything he had was gone.
Right.
But he wants nothing to do with it anymore.
That's fair enough.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Love that story.
Oh, it's a great story. And the thing is, I decided to look into it because I was listening to a repeat of Art Bell's first interview with him, and I realized, wait a second, this town I moved to 20 years ago is like half mile or half hour drive away from the town that Mike Markham did his experiments.
Huh.
So that's how I was able to interview the people who arrested him and yeah, all that stuff.
That's
Yeah.
fantastic. So the people that might, read your book, especially, what lurks beyond the paranormal in your own backyard and like, hey, I need to go visit some of these places. There's lots around me. What advice do you have for these people seeking these
All
experiences?
right. So yeah, that's a great question. I'm gonna take a step back to Haunted Missouri. That was my first paranormal book, and I wrote it as because I always loved reading like Hans Holzer's books and books about hauntings, but they were all about private residences. And you can't like go investigate a private residence. I mean, somebody's gonna put a shotgun in your face if you're looking in their window at 3 o'clock in the morning,
Absolutely.
right? Yeah. So I wrote about public places anybody can go to. I even gave directions, times they're open, prices, how much it costs
Yeah.
to go to Mark Twain Cave, that sort of stuff. So that's a kind of a guidebook to haunted spots in the state. But otherwise, in Paranormal Missouri, all I did stuck a pin in the map. I had a pencil hooked to a thread, and it was 100 miles that thread was, and I made a circle. And I looked at it for all the paranormal stuff I could find within that 100 mile radius. And I found enough. Actually, I found more than enough to fill a book. There were so many haunted stories, I didn't include all of them.
Right.
But my advice is if you're interested in looking for the paranormal, yeah, look in your backyard. There's stuff there. You might not know it, but it's there.
Absolutely. And another one of your books, Chasing American Monsters, which I love, handy little reference and plus just fun to flip through. But if you're going somewhere, you've got the list of the cryptids in that state or what it's known for. When researching that, did you find any obscure ones you hadn't known about, but
Oh yeah, there were so many I didn't know about. there was, yeah, this is like the most ridiculous one, the rock slide boulder in Colorado. Yeah, it's a whale with a hook on its tail. The hook is to keep it attached to the top of a mountain, and when it sees people walking underneath it, it lets go of the hook and swoops down and swallows them. Yeah, there are a lot of great cryptid stories that are absolutely nuts, but there are so many that could be real.
Oh yeah.
The Shuka I might be pr I'm no I'm pronouncing it wrong, is a it looks like a hyena that was shot in Montana back in the 1800s. And okay, we haven't had hyenas in America for like 10,000 years, but have we?
Yeah,
Thunderbirds, you know,
exactly.
we had the Territorns, which were enormous birds like a condor. But they had 20-foot wingspans, you know, they're the size of, small, propeller planes. Are they all gone? Yeah, I don't know. We had lions in America. We had camels in America. You know, those
Sure
people have
did.
reported seeing those over the years. Are they seeing something that's not there? Or do we just have populations that we don't know about? Because we like to think of America as we know everything. No, there are huge swaths of this country that people haven't been to. I mean, look at the size of our deserts. Look at the size of the forests, in the Pacific Northwest. Man, it's anything could be hiding up there.
Absolutely. And that brings us to, so I got this book. I can check out all the cryptids in the 50 states, but what if I need more? What if I'm wondering about like what's in Mexico or Canada or Greenland
Yeah.
even?
Hey, you don't have to, you only have to wait till September 8th
Oh.
because Chasing North American Monsters is coming out September 8th. And I cover everything from the Arctic Circle to Panama. And there are some awesome creatures that I found. And I tell you one that I'm sold on that might still be around. I'm just going to say giant ground sloth. I'm not going to go any farther into
Oh
it.
yeah.
But I'm going to tease you with the giant ground sloth.
Love it. I'm so stoked for this book and that cover is awesome. That sharktopus thing is going to haunt my
Oh,
dreams, I promise you.
yeah, I know, man. And Lauren Coleman, the great cryptozoologist Lauren Coleman, was kind enough to write the foreword to it.
That's incredible.
And next year, we've got Chasing the World's Monsters coming out.
Ooh.
And, great cryptozoologist who goes, look at it, he travels to China and Sumatra and all over the planet and the Congo looking for monsters. Adam Davies wrote the foreword to that one.
Okay.
So I got some good stuff in the works.
Right on. That is awesome. Well, I've taken up enough of your time and I'm so thankful that you came on the show. I appreciate it. And thanks.
Hey man, I had a great time. You had man, this was fun. I judge and I only tell people this when I mean it is I judge interviews on if I could be sitting around drinking a beer with you just chatting. That's what this seemed like.
Right on. Well, I sure appreciate it. And well, hopefully we'll talk to you later.
I hope so. Hey, keep me on. Yeah, keep me on your list, man.
Absolutely.
All right, take care.
Man, that was a lot of fun. And once again, I just really like to thank Jason Offutt, who is very gracious with his time, and encourage all of you to go out there and check out his books if you haven't already. I'll talk to you all again next week. Until then, keep it weird, but be careful because it can get dark out there.